This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And I'm with Tim, man. Tim, how you doing?
I'm doing okay, Pete. I'm, same old around here. How you been?
Doing all right. Before we start off, I guess we just want to offer our condolences to the Hales family. We've had Devin on the show many times. We go over NXT. Dylan and I go back at least 10 or 15 years. I've known the whole family. I've met them all personally, and they had a really rough loss. And I just want to offer our sharp condolences and sending love and thoughts to you all's way. So sorry about everything. I can't even imagine what you're going through. It's gotta be rough. So I'm doing okay. I got home today, and I ordered something from Amazon, and I get to the door. I'm like, great, and I look at the package. It has the wrong name on it. Luckily, it was in my apartment complex, and I figured out that the Dodo had just flip-flopped them, so I tracked it down, and lo and behold, I go up to the other guy's door, and my package is sitting on his patio, so I just drop his off and grab mine and leave with it. Have you ever had a mix-up like that with your Amazon package?
No, but what's funny is I just saw, part of it too is our building, our mailboxes are really small, so all of our stuff just gets left out, so you just grab your stuff, basically. But, okay. Funnily enough, I was on the, before we started recording, I was driving back home this morning, and I saw someone who was delivering a bunch of packages on a cart, and they all fell off the cart and fell on the ground, and it was a whole big mess, and I was just like, oh man, geez, that's rough. And then I realized it was one of those private Amazon delivery people. It wasn't even like how they, they don't use UPS or FedEx, yeah, or whatever. It was one of the people who's actually, privately work. And I was just like, oh man, like it's such a rough situation, especially in that, because you're basically, that they're not getting paid well, and they're intentionally undercutting other businesses, and they're people who aren't really trained, and
they push speed and speed.
So that stuff is bound to continue to happen. It's just because these people are not, they're not professional delivery people, they're just people who are looking for a job, and they're just getting whatever job they can find,
and as a Bola fan or a PWG fan, I saw PCO involved this year. I think that's fantastic because, he really is the success story of indie wrestling, and one of the best stories of the year. If you're thinking about 10 great things, or 10 important things that happened this year, the PCO comeback is one of them. Are you excited about seeing him live? Is this your first time, or?
It would be the first time.
I'm assuming you're going.
I haven't 100% decided that I'm going. We'll see. Okay. But there are a lot of people that I'm really excited for. Obviously, you said PCO. Brody King also announced, which is exciting for me. Jody Fleisch, very interesting to see him back. Probably the person I'm most excited for, if I'm being perfectly honest. Ilya Dragunov announced as number 4. So that's going to be exciting to see, especially with Walter being the champion in PWG, so that's interesting to see where they go with that.
They're trying something different. It's not the same old cast of characters this year,
Yeah, they're mixing in a lot of people. Robbie Eagles, Joey Janela, Puma King, obviously an interesting one for sure. David Starr, Ray Horace, Chris Brooks has been an announcement that's exciting for me because I've been a big fan of his for a long time, even if a singles tournament is not necessarily the number one place for him to shine. Obviously Matt Riddle, and then the last one that's been announced, Darby Allin. I'm not the hugest Darby Allin fan, but I'm excited to see him live. I think Chris Brooks is a guy I really want to get to see. Puma King, obviously very exciting just because he's you know, really good and like amazing Lucha Libre wrestler. Ilya Dragunov, I think, for me, biggest shock, biggest surprise. I can't think of who else they could announce that would probably get me more excited than Ilya Dragunov at this point, who I haven't already seen in PWG. So that's probably going to end up being my top kind of excitement level person. PCO, definitely interested to see what he does there. I don't know how the PWG crowd is going to take to him, if I'm perfectly honest. We'll see. Just because, I mean, his matches have been what they've been, and I don't know that the PWG crowd, while they like a lot of that stuff, they might, I don't know, there's not a very good chance of it, but I think that there is some chance that they might turn on him. The other thing, too, is it's going to be in the Globe, so that's going to affect everything about the sound and the way the crowd it comes off on tape, so we'll see if that affects anything at all. The only person I guess I'm holding out for that isn't a shock surprise, excited to see live person, but the person who I want to be in Bola would be Jake Atlas, you know, honestly, because I think that as a local guy, you got Brody King in there, but I think Jake Atlas is the other local guy who I think really deserves a spot in Bola to get to show off what he can do. So hopefully he gets that spot, as he's been, I mean, he's been prominently featured in PWG so far. He's done pretty well. And then the guy who I think I'm like dangerously worried might show up. I think he might not, but who knows? He may end up showing up, would be Marty Scroll. I really hope he's not in the tournament because he's had some of the worst matches of the last couple of years of the tournament. So we'll see what ends up happening with him. He might be too busy with the New Japan to show up. So, but yeah, Bola's looking interesting. There's a chance I'll go. I mean, I may pick and choose which nights I go depending on what the matches end up shaking out with.
Right.
Three nights in a row with the tickets being around $80 is just...
That's rough, too, man. It's expensive. And that's a commitment, too.
It's an amount of money that I just can't rationalize with myself to spend, especially when, by the end of it, you start feeling like you're on this endurance test where you're not really even enjoying it as much as you could be. And it's not going to be the same in the Globe Theater, obviously, because the building is much nicer and there's air conditioning and all that, so it's not going to be as hard. But even still, I mean, I have a life, I've got a family, going to a wrestling show three nights in a row like that is rough, and at that cost, it's kind of the trade-off makes it not worth it.
Yeah, I mean, I've done I mean, you know, I've gone to Mania years in a row, and I've gone to show after show after show, and I've gone to back-to-back Ring of Honor shows in San Antonio. It's tough to do back-to-back shows just because it's just like, I mean, I mean, we both love wrestling, but, you know, it gets daunting after a while, and it's hard to keep your energy level up sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, even so, to me, though, like, even that seems like it would be almost easier to deal with because you're in a community of people who are all doing it, and you're kind of supporting each other and going through it all. But for this, it's like, yes, there's a big group of people going to Bola, but the rest of the town, the rest of everything is just, you know, business as usual, especially in LA. So
And it's a burnout because you're seeing the same workers.
Yeah, exactly. You're seeing a lot of the same people over and over again, which at least at WrestleMania weekend, you're getting some mix up because of
At least there's a variety companies. If you play your cards right, yeah.
Yeah, and different companies even booking differently, which is another thing. PWG does have kind of their philosophy when it comes to booking, which is a lot of nothing. You know, they don't do a lot of booking. So on the WrestleMania weekends, you can go to a show that maybe has a lot more character development and storyline stuff as well as just spot fest matches. And you don't get the same option for the PWG weekend, unfortunately.
Right. I saw they traded the tag belts back and forth, hot-shotted them, made a big deal about them, you know, on the UK tour, that Mustache Mountain wins them. And then they lost them right back at the NXT tapings. That's pretty funny. What about you?
Yeah, it's interesting because it's almost kind of old school, but you would think that nowadays it wouldn't work, but it seems like it still works. I mean, people, even though they know everyone can see what's going on, and it's not like, you know, Ric Flair dropping the belt in Japan, even though he's not, you know, technically sanctioned or something along those lines. But it is kind of similar, but people still get excited about it. I mean, the UK crowds are still pop huge for the idea that one of their local people won the tag belts, even if they should, for all intents and purposes, be able to remember that, or at least, like, kind of deign that this is not going to last and that it's going to just switch back to business as usual as soon as they get back to the normal kind of NXT show. But But who knows? I mean, they could use it as the spark for the tag titles that they're going to introduce in NXT UK to be like, well, these guys, they won the NXT, you know, regular champion tag team championships, so they deserve to be in the finals of the tournament or whatever. They could do something along those lines. The problem that I have with it, though, is, you know, I mean, I've been on here pretty openly saying I'm not the biggest Trent Seven fan, obviously, is that I hate the idea that they're putting them back together because I think that there's more you can get out of Tyler Bate in a singles than you can having him tag with Trent Seven. So I just worry that that's like gonna, this is like a refocus on that them as a tag team act.
And what do you think? I mean, have you heard anything, any other interesting things happen because of the UK NXT connection?
Not yet. Everything is still pretty, I guess, in flux. People are still trying to figure out what everything is going to mean. Obviously there's something interesting going on with this idea of the Coffee Brothers and Noam Dar creating some kind of Scottish ICW unit to kind of be involved in the NXT UK, which will be interesting. I think it's actually a good place for Dar. I think he can play the heel. I honestly think it's almost similar to Dar playing kind of a Prince Devitt from New Japan character. But he's got the two heavies, and he's the undersized junior guy who's kind of pushing being the outsider from Scotland in the UK. I could definitely see that working pretty well if they do that, especially if you play off of the actual connection between Jordan Devlin and Finn Balor, if Jordan Devlin becomes a part of it, and he can fight off the Scot and kind of fight for the honor of the UK, you know, even if he is from Ireland, of the UK kind of NXT division. So that stuff is all interesting because it's not necessarily something you would predict. So obviously Dar, he's been a 205 Live guy, if that, you know, kind of missing. And they're
still he's been hurt, showing, yeah.
Yeah, they're clearly kind of showing some kind of interest in using guys like him to kind of vitalize this NXT UK division, which is probably smart. It sucks for a guy like Dar, who obviously signed before this was a thing and kind of assumed that he was going to be on main TV, and then 205 gets announced and, oh, now you're not actually even on regular TV, you're on 205, and then now this, where it's almost like, oh, so I'm on, like, you know, the UK version of NXT now, what does this even mean? But in a lot of ways, I mean, the roster is bloated, and sending people over there may not be a bad idea.
Yeah, I totally agree. I ended up dropping my Progress subscription because I thought it became null and void almost in a way. Yeah. I really don't think WWE is going to play nicey-nice and give these guys I just don't see it, honestly.
That's the other side of it, too. What do they need Progress for at this point now if they're running their own? We talked about it last week, but I mean, yeah.
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 It's like, you know, does NXT allow talent to play elsewhere besides Hero? I don't think so. So why would they do it in the UK?
Yeah, exactly. Especially with a company that's touring the entire country and running venues the same size or bigger than what you're probably expecting to run for the NXT.
Yeah, you know, so I end up dropping that. You know, and then we lost Big Van Vader and Leon White. I always thought he was the greatest big man, just a great, great wrestler. Really changed the tide for wrestling in the States, and the fact that he was like really the first super heavyweight to ever win the world title. You know, you had some other big guys like One Man Gang and Terry Gordy and like UWF, but it really was Vader pinning Sting cleanly at Great American Bash 92 that really, you always had grit to be the guy who could realize that a super heavyweight can be the big, win the title. I mean, you had your Bam Bam Bigelows, but he never won the big belt. Yeah, always, you had your earthquakes. You always had big guys, but they never, they could challenge for it, but never could win the belt. And with Vader, that kind of changed the style and stuff, and he helped usher in a more physical style that's even very hard to do nowadays because not many people with that size and intensity. I mean, people will say Walter, but you know what? Vader was probably a lot bigger than Walter in his prime when it came to size, and I've always thought he was like one of the all-time great workers of all time. Do you have any Vader thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that there, you know, people might try to make arguments about some of the modern guys being more athletic and all this, but I really do think it's unfair to even compare, because Vader, he's just a whole another beast. We talked about Walter. I mean, Walter's probably the closest comparison of anyone that can come close to, like, still being a guy in that vein of big man. But, like you talked about, I mean, I was, to kind of, you know, honor the passing of Vader or just have some memories, I was watching some, you know, UWFI Vader stuff, just because, like, that falls into my wheelhouse of what I really like. And, and I mean, the guy just, the way that he wrestled, it's just, though he used his size even in the shoot setting that was, like, perfect for what he was doing. It played off of everything, but it was still always about the size. I think there's guys nowadays, I think I've talked about Jonah Rock a little bit here, and we haven't really reviewed some of his best work, I don't think, yet. But he's a guy who uses his size well, too. But he's, I mean, again, nowhere near the size of Vader, really. And I'm not even saying he's at the same level as Vader as a wrestler, but actually, you know what? I'm looking this over. Yeah, Vader is much heavier, but about the same height as Walter, according to the internet.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, but Vader was 350 in his prime and stuff.
Yeah.
And then ballooned up to, 450, and it's not like when he wasn't in wrestling shape.
But yeah, I think easily the best big man of a style of big man that really was big, like a guy who wrestled as a big man. But then when you talk about the credibility, the athleticism, the believability, that he could be your top champion, because he wasn't just the monster of the week for like a Hulk Hogan champion or someone like that. He was a guy who you could credibly believe as the champion, a guy that people would pay to see, be it just for the aura, just for the awe of the size, or also to pay to see because they want to see him get beat. I think he definitely, that speaks to his quality as an overall worker, that he was able to parlay what was, you know, kind of an attraction style aura and presentation into being someone who could be your weekly champion, you know, the guy who people pay attention to. And honestly, I think especially that era where he had the, you know, I think it was it three continents or four continents, he had the championship belt.
He had so many belts.
Like Japan, Europe, and Mexico, I think all at once was the start.
Yeah, and then eventually and then got the U.S. too at one point.
Then he got the U.S. So technically, I guess it depends. I mean, Central America versus North America, I don't know for sure. But I think still, technically, whatever it is, like, that era actually created a credibility where, because of people knowing that and thinking about him that way, he really made those belts. I mean, his credibility as being the champion of the entire world, I mean, not since, you know, Gotch Hackenschmidt had you felt like there was someone who was so much a world champion, you know, that he was the champion of the entire world. And I think he, again, like I said, he added credibility to the belts rather than the other way around, which people talk about all the time and how that's the important thing, but very few guys really did in the history of wrestling really did lend that level of credibility to championships that someone like Vader did. So yeah, obviously one of the all-time greats. Clearly I a lot of times I kind of debate back and forth, but I don't think that there's much of an argument about him being the best big man for what I really mean when I say big man wrestling.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Yeah, and they put up a nice little collection on the network. I mean, there's him and Brody, him versus Hansen, him versus Sting, and three different matches. They have him versus, which I still love to this day. I mean, it's a horrible vignette, but it's so awesome, the White Castle beer.
Oh, yeah.
It's so cheesy. It's great. And you know what? I mean, yeah, Dusty always loved doing those type of things. You can even see when he was booking Florida, when he would do the, when they'd have go out on location to the front, to the ranch and stuff. You know, Vince loves those things in a way, because I think he would love to be able to promote wrestling that large. So, the one thing I have a bad taste in my mouth is that he never got into the Hall of Fame, the WWE Hall of Fame, and you know it would have meant a lot to him. And knowing that the man was in a bad shape, I really wish they would have put him in before he passed away, because it would have meant so much to the guy. With that said, I still hope they put him in. It'd be the right thing to do, but it would be kind of, you know, a little too late, Jack, type of thing. Sorry, a little too late. Sorry, Charlie. But I think a lot of the wrestlers would appreciate Vince doing that. Where do you stand on that?
Yeah, I think he deserved it. He should have been put in, obviously, sooner. There's no doubt about that. And I hate it, because I just heard someone talking about that like part of the issue was that they felt like partially it could have been related to the fact that he was kind of campaigning too much, and that was a negative for making them want to put him in, and they thought that he was just crying wolf trying to get a payday or whatever. And it's just such fucking bullshit. The guy clearly he could have main evented his year easily. He's a hands down lockout Hall of Fame, you know, candidate who deserves that spot, especially in the WWE Hall of Fame, which is in a lot of ways a joke at this point. And to have left him out because you thought he was politicking a little bit too much for it, I mean, I don't know. Clearly the guy was not hurting for money, because he was not taking dates unless it really, really kind of lined up and made sense. He wasn't one of these guys who was out there. You didn't see him constantly doing everything, and he was really sick. So, like, yeah, they should have got him in when they could have, and now putting him in, he'll be the token dead guy for the year, as they only allow one now, and, you know, probably they'll do it this year, but again, it feels too little too late, and it really sucks, especially from a company who did him wrong to begin with. Like, I'm sorry, but his WWF run was a travesty, and I really put it on them. I mean, and, you know, the Shawn Michaels thing obviously didn't help, but I think that was a big part of it, that kind of taking sides with the pretty boy Shawn Michaels instead of seeing what you had there with Vader as a guy who I'm not even saying that they had to put the title belt on him with that whole conversation about, like, he was going to get the title and then got politicked out of it. But even if you just used him for a couple year run where you extracted as much credibility out of him as you could to get your guys over, they didn't even do that. And that's the part that's depressing to me, is that you squandered any potential that you had with him, and basically you just devalued him and didn't get anything out of it. And so I just think turning around on that as almost a make good, they really should have put him in the Hall of Fame when they had the chance. It's just that part definitely does suck.
Exactly. I totally agree. They're loading up more Mid-Atlantic television on the network. I'm loving it. The only thing I'm sad about is, so far, I mean, hopefully it all gets up there, but it just seems like they're leaving gaps in Ricky Steamboat matches. Like, they've left off Steamboat and Youngblood versus the Briscoes in the build in that feud. They've left off so far, they've left off the Dick Slater, Ricky Steamboat match, and it's like, you have all the other weeks except for that one. And then they've left off the flag match with him and Canoodle versus Koloff, and Koloff versus the Koloffs. And I'm like, it was like they have all the other ones, right? They pull that week. So I just wonder if they're doing that on purpose, or it's just random. It's probably just random, but it is frustrating. Anything else you want to talk about, Tim?
Well, when you mentioned Mid-Atlantic, it reminded me of CWF Mid-Atlantic, a show we used to review on this when it existed. They announced that they're going to be Twitch streaming one of their next shows here. Freedom of Expression, June 30th, so it's coming up in a couple days. They're saying they're going to stream it live on Twitch, I guess. We've got, because me and you have no fucking clue what's been going on the TV, I know I haven't, because I haven't been paying attention to spoilers and watching what they're booking.
Yeah, there's no TV, yeah.
Yeah, it looks like what they got booked is Trevor versus Andrew Everett in a bunkhouse bull rope match. So, you know, it'll be really fun to watch that Twitch stream and not have any fucking clue how they got to a bull rope match in the booking, which used to be my favorite part of CWF, was getting to know why stuff was happening and not just watching it happen. And then we've got Cool J versus The Coach, which, another one, why the fuck is The Coach in a wrestling match? Oh yeah, I'm not going to get to see any of the lead up for that either. Just randomly see the show being streamed live, which is, you know, pretty cool. And
they haven't had any video to put out, and they can't, you know, pull a John Philip Babbage and ask him to cut some film for him.
Yeah, get me something so I can have any idea what's going on. Looks like Johnny Weaver Cup is starting up, which is also going to be fun because we still haven't even seen the Canoodle Cup. So,
yeah.
You know, that's it's all very interesting to me that they're going to randomly just start streaming a CWF show on Twitch. I get it. I mean, if you want to watch it, more power to you. But again, for me, my favorite part of the CWF show was always the booking and the lead and why they got to stuff. And I don't know how excited I am to just watch a random show where I don't know any of the booking, any of the lead up. And we've talked about it. I mean, I don't know who the commentary team is going to be. Cecil, I think, does a great job, but without, you know, a Stutzy there who was a great play-by-play guy giving me the background and setting me up
stories because he was booking it.
Yeah, so that I could build up and understand the stories as I'm watching it, even if I'm trying to catch up. Without that, I'm even less inclined to want to check it out because, again, Cecil's great as a play-by-play guy as well, but I don't know if he's even going to be the one calling it. I don't know if he's going to be able to get me caught up as well. So yeah, I just... It was an interesting announcement when I saw that, and it definitely took me aback a bit because I'm just kind of like, oh, cool. Like, I don't know. Is this it? Is this the plan? They're going to just basically retcon everything that happened and just start from scratch here without bringing back Worldwide? And I could see them doing it because it's a lazier version. We're just not going to have a TV show, and we're just going to live stream the full shows when they happen once a month instead of having a weekly TV. So we'll see. We'll see where it goes. But I don't know about you, but I probably won't be watching that show just because I don't have any context of what's going on.
No, exactly. I lost interest. They left, you know, left us high and dry. And as a fan, it's like, all right, later, you know. I know we're not going to be picking up. They're not going to be picking up. I'm back cataloging it. I'm still terrified on how all of a sudden they fix their problems. I've been hearing stuff, all these different rumors, so I don't want to comment. But, some of what I've heard just makes me want to roll my eyes. So, on that said, why don't we head up? And one of the new shows we are reviewing is MLW Fusion. We're going to be starting with episode number 9 right now. Let's talk about overall thoughts here first, Tim. I mean, I enjoyed a lot what I saw on this MLW show. Not match quality, but I liked what they were going with some of the storylines. I think they need to slow it down. I felt like they tried to cram too much into the episode. Some of this stuff could have gotten over. I felt because they were trying to cram so much stuff, stuff didn't get over to where it needed to be because of how much cramming they were doing. There were some of the things I liked. I liked how they are using some old school blood, like a Robert Parker or Robert Fuller, whatever you want to call him, Colonel Robert Parker. I enjoy that. I enjoy the shooter crew with Lawler and Simon Gotch and who's the other guy?
It's Gotch, Lawler, and Lawler? Oh, geez, I forgot who the other guy was too. Oh, okay. Man.
All right. Well, I enjoyed that. But then again, I enjoyed that. I enjoyed Simon Gotch doing the Simon Gotch challenge where he challenges anybody to beat him in under 10 minutes. And it felt like that's something they should have been using jobbers for the first at least 6 or 8 times and building to it. And it felt like they went to the well too quickly already with Pero. So I was a little, you know, like, eh. And we'll get more into detail when we talk about that type of stuff. So I just, again, I think they just threw a lot out at us, but I felt like they should have focused maybe on 2 matches and an angle, and then it felt like they were running a lot of just nondescript promo guys out there with no rhyme or reason to build things. But I thought they had a lot of potential. What were your initial thoughts on the show?
Very similar to you.
I love having like Tony Schiavone on announcing. He already... even though he was burnt out when he left WCW, he seems rejuvenized, and he's already, to me, one of the better announcers around, sounding-wise.
Right.
Yeah, what he was saying made sense.
I love his delivery, obviously. It's a common trope here, is that I love the real sports style, and Schiavone, you know, lends a air of credibility and real sports style commentary to what he's doing. So that he, you know, he definitely works for me there. And I think you're right. There's some old school, you know, Colonel Robert Parker, stuff like the guys coming back in that's good. But then there's some stuff here where I question, especially with the kind of, you know, the, I guess you would say, like, go friendly nature of kind of the talent and the people who are behind the scenes running the shows affecting some of the stuff and some of the booking. And one guy in particular, I'd say MVP, who's a guy who clearly very protective of the way that he's booked in a lot of places. He gets booked in a lot of places because he's got some credibility, some history, and some drawing power with name recognition. But I thought the way he was used here was clearly kind of a little bit, just kind of speaks a little bit too much of that they're going to focus on him because they're friendly with him, and it's not necessarily the best use of a guy like this. You know, him being used, I was just talking today, him being used in an APW or something where the bookers are bringing him in to, you know, get attention, the crowd's into it, and he kind of protects himself and doesn't want a job or anything like that. Sure, I understand he wants to protect his credibility, his aura, all that, but he's not going to have as much, I guess, input in his creative and his direction and all this stuff, and I feel like I worry that here he does, and that will lead to him being focused on more than he really should be, if we're perfectly honest. I don't think he's a guy who you want to be a focused act in your promotion. The match with MJF that he had, I thought was good, but again, I worry that they have relationships with people in a way that they're going to, there's going to be some cronyism and some stuff done that's not for the benefit of the product. So that's something I worry about. But I think that they have a lot of younger guys that they're using well. MLW, clearly the big star of the promotion is the booking, obviously, with the kind of, I would say, the biggest star, the most famous thing about the company is the booker in a lot of ways. He's the guy who's out there the most with his podcasts, involved in a lot of stuff, fingers in a lot of pies. People know who Court Bauer is, former WWE creative, you know. So in a lot of ways, the company's booking is the main kind of feature of the company, and they are using guys who you see all over the place, but they're using them in unique and different ways, adding more to their characters, adding depth to their characters in a good way. That said, I agree, there's a little bit too much of it, and you can tone it back a bit, and you don't need to go a million miles per hour with everyone. I mean, there's stuff in here that should have just been completely cut from the show, honestly, yeah. And there was no need for it at all. And yeah, so it's like, that's kind of the issue, I think.
Agree though. So let's start off with it. Pretty much, we get a shot of Robert Fuller, and he's with the stud stable. Nothing a lot going on. They're looking at the TV screen. Any takes here?
Yeah, I like the Dirty Blondes who've gotten, or is that who? It's the Dirty Blondes, but I don't know that Pero fits the unit, and I don't know that he fits the with the Dirty Blondes. So, but not much going on here in this segment per se.
Then that leads us into here more like I'm enjoying the combination of the old school and the new talent. I like how they mesh together, and I think that's smart. Then we get
Shane Strickland getting attacked.
Video of Strickland, Brody King attacking Shane Strickland. Which looks like he did it in front of a bank or something, dentist office, post office. I like that Brody King looks like a guy who would be a bounty hunter. But you know what? Most of them aren't afraid to do it and hide about it. So I don't completely like the presentation of it. Let's put it that way. But I enjoy it because it's an old school angle. Where do your thoughts lay on this?
I like it. This is one of the ones I'm talking about where someone's, you know, a place is actually booking Brody King with some kind of character instead of just being this big kind of hoss guy who's, you know, obviously got a lot of potential. And the Lucha Giant thing, I think he really needs to drop in a lot of places.
Oh, hell yeah.
I like how athletic he is, but he needs to not push that as his thing because, I mean, even with what he can do, he's not the cleanest and he's not the, you know, he's big, definitely big. But, like, it's, I don't know, it just feels like he's trying to shoehorn that in.
It's like, dude, it's your look. It's going to be your calling card and your size.
And your aggression.
You can do cool shit. That helps. So, but don't fucking stamp it on your forehead. That's fucking, I don't know, act like you've been to the dance before, if you will, you know?
Yeah, he's a big guy. His standout stuff so far, especially the stuff with Walter, has been about his physicality and aggression, not about his spots and his flying. So, That's what he needs to focus on. And I liked, like you said, the bounty hunter thing. The one thing I would say, gym shorts. I don't like a guy wearing a, you know, cut off denim vest with spikes and studs going to collect a bounty that he's running up on some guy, like you said, in a bank or something, and he's wearing gym shorts. Why is he wearing gym shorts? It doesn't make any sense. So, yeah, that was my only issue with the whole thing.
Yeah, that leads us to an MEP interview. It's like, yeah, who gives a shit? Yeah, exactly. What about you?
Yeah, this is what I'm talking about. Why is the guy getting fucking promo time even?
Yeah. And then we get MJF versus MVP, and we get like a repeat, like a promo by MJF. I enjoyed this for the most part. It wasn't great or anything, but I thought it was solid work. I liked MVP working the back and MJF working the arm. Like MJF collecting it to MVP's. What's the word? What am I looking at? Like MGF's controlling, and it leads to MVP's comeback. MVP, I thought, sold well. And I thought it was a fun match. You know, nothing great or anything, nothing blow away. But I thought they told a story and gave us what we needed for an undercard match. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, the undercard TV match, perfect for suiting that role. I like the MJF promo, especially, you know, in ring before the match, because it feels like, you know, he's cocky prick taking the mic, taking the promo time that he's not being given. Makes sense for me. Like the heel work from MJF, always, he's very good about that. Always, you know, taking cheap shots and cheating. And MVP selling was well. Yeah, I thought everything was good. But again, the finish with the guys coming in, I think you didn't need all that. I think we could have gone with just the feet on the ropes could have been enough and give MJF at least a somewhat, you know, like he's got something to him in the victory and not necessarily that he needed interference and feet on the ropes and everything to put away MVP, who, I mean, to me, if you're pushing MJF, really, like, he should be a guy who should be pushed at a more believable level, especially with how much he cheats and everything, that I think he could get the win just based off his own cunning and cheating, at least to give him a little bit more credibility.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's, again, that's fine. They're it's not fine, but, again, it's expected because of the relationship and the protection of MVP that they're going to do.
And then they plug the battle. They plug this battle riot show they're building to. Good, they got to, you know, plan their big shows, so that's good. Barrington Hughes interview, what were your thoughts here?
This is one of the things that I think should have just been completely cut off. It felt completely pointless to me. I don't know why they had this here at all, really. He was fine as a promo, but it didn't progress the storyline in any way, and it didn't really make any sense.
Yeah, and then we get a Johnny Yuta and Jason Cade interview, and they're teasing problems. Whoopie-doo. That's like a booking that happens all the time, right, with tag partners?
I know, and it's like we're having the match to crown our first ever tag team champions, and one of the teams is already having trouble. It's like, God damn, can you not wait a little bit before you start this?
A little bit, you know. Exactly.
Yeah.
Then we get Simon Gotch out with his team, the shooting team, which I like, and he does this Simon Gotch challenge, and Pero accepts. I like the concept of the Simon Gotch challenge based on the TV title defenses, or back in the day, the old Carney, where they invite anybody into the ring the last 5 minutes with the champ type thing. I've always been a mark for that. Still, Pero feels like he's a big enough name where that should have been built to, instead of Gotch beating him so quickly. He has actually made the whole entire thing, one, anticlimactic, and wondering what's going to be his comeuppance, because he's going to have to get it eventually. What were your overall thoughts?
Yeah, and, you know, another famous timed challenge that you forget is the Rodney Mack White Boy Challenge, one of my personal favorites from the doldrums of WWE SmackDown era wrestling, when he would wrestle any white boy for 3 minutes or whatever it was. Yeah, I agree with you. I liked the interference stuff here, but again, like I talked about, like, if you had cut the interference from MJF match with MVP and then had the interference with the roll of quarters here, then it feels more important. But now I've got two matches back to back ending in, you know, being involved with interference for the finish. It's like, God damn, like, you know, that trope can be overdone. Like, you really can overdo stuff, and that's clearly what they're doing, going to interference so much. And I agree with you. I think, I mean, maybe we've missed it, and they've been doing the challenge for a while, and he has beat a bunch of jobbers, but I think a challenge like this, you got to do a lot of clean jobber wins, and then you start building into stuff like this with cheating over names, and I don't think that you have Pero be one of the guys that you do the cheating over names, again, like you said, so quickly. I think it should have been a lot more hard-fought, got closer to the time limit, and actually showed, like, desperation in the finish. This one, it felt like it came across too easy. And another issue that I have here is that we got the Dirty Blondes come out to save Pero because the relationship to Fuller, but then we cut back to the next match after all the promo stuff, and the Dirty Blondes are making another entrance after the last thing we saw was they were in the fucking ring. So, I don't know. This kind of stuff is continuity stuff that really annoys me.
Yeah. And that leads us, we got the Brody King interview, which is fine. And then we get Court Bauer audio interview, making sure everyone knows he's the big dog here. And leads into the tag match of Dirty Blondes versus Lucha Brothers versus Caden Wheeler. I thought it was all action, but man, I thought it was sloppy. I was messy at times. And I was having a problem following the story. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that the idea would be that the Blondes are the heels, the Lucha Brothers are the faces, and Team TBD are tweener because of the, you know, communication issues between the members with Jason Cross and Yuta not getting along. But again, I agree with you that it made it feel sloppy. It felt like the babyface. It felt like Team TBD and the Lucha Brothers were constantly as babyfaces double teaming to team up on the Blondes, who honestly the Blondes were kind of the at least trying to be the driving force and the narrative glue and structure of the match. But unfortunately, I don't think that they were in the match enough, or kind of even seemingly given the direction to try to keep the match in any confines of having psychology. So, it, you know, they didn't really do much to hold it together. Otherwise, yeah, there was a lot of spot.
Yeah, it was all over the place.
Pentagon Jr., I mean, is, you talk about, he's sloppy, he's slow, and then in a match setting like this, he's not great. He's really good playing off of Phoenix, I think, and he can be good in these settings, but he was not very good here. I like Yuta. I think probably out of everyone in the match stands out the most for me, other than, you know, Phoenix, who I like all the time. But I think for star wise and for what you're trying to move forward, I think they did a good job here, kind of putting Yuta to feel like he's on the level of the Lucha Brothers moving forward. Even depending on what you end up doing, I think they're probably going to end up obviously breaking up the tag team pretty quickly and having him move on from that. Lucha Brothers get the tag belts, and I don't know. I don't know if it's the best call, honestly. You know, they just lost the PWG titles recently. They're doing a lot of stuff in Mexico with CMLL, AAA, all this weird stuff going on with them. And it feels like kind of their time as being big stars on the indies in the States is winding down to me in a way where it feels like putting the tag title belts on them now feels like you're behind the eight ball and you're trying to catch up to what other people were doing months ago instead of, you know, being on the vanguard of what's going on now.
Right. Totally agree. Overall thoughts, I thought it was a solid show. I don't think I ever would have done a three-way to in a tag setting to crown new champions.
No, you know, that's when something, and when the match started, I questioned it too. One thing that didn't make sense, if you're going to try to do something like this for crowning the tag team titles, the part that I thought was weird was that it was a three-way instead of a four-way. Even though that might seem like the opposite point, it's like, if you're going to do that, why wouldn't you go all the way and have the four teams, you know?
I totally agree. Totally agree. And yeah, when our other thoughts we shared earlier, so we want to take a break?
Yeah.
Yeah, then we'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place Basement Nations, JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlacementNation.com. We offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Placement Nation Wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, along with Main Event, Survey Says, the Monday Night Wars, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, as well as Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network podcasts and pod blasts on topics old and new. You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including the Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback today. All these shows, plus others, available at PlaySpation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaySpation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaySpation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And we're back, and we got NXT this week, and essentially it was a replay. I mean, just a recap of the TakeOver show. But we got a couple matches. Opened up with Dakota Kai versus Bianca Belair, and I thought it was a really good match. I thought Dakota Kai was a straight-up pure babyface, looked, worked hard, sold. Feels like both girls' stock is on the rise after watching this match, and I feel both of them would have gotten good reviews from their agents backstage of how well this match was executed. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm with you. I thought that they both looked great. These NXT week after shows are always so weird because they try to act like it's after the TakeOver happened, but you can clearly tell it's in the same building. I mean, it's so obvious, but they just stick with it. So, yeah, I thought that the all in all, I thought that this match was done really well. I think Bianca Belair is you know, improving leaps and bounds every time I see her, honestly. Dakota Kai's selling was great. Her, my only issue would be I felt like she kind of missed a little bit of that Ricky Steamboat rule of, you know, every few moves you need to be getting some kind of offense. It felt like by the time she got to her comeback, I really felt like she had been selling dead for a little bit too long, where it was hard for me to get into her comeback completely. But she still did a good job, and the crowd got into her eventually. So I just never really felt like she was a believable threat to win. But like you said, execution wise, everything was very crisp. I just think the one issue I would have was that Dakota Kai felt like she kind of died by the time it got to her comeback. It felt like she was completely dead.
Yeah. And then we got just a string of interviews. We got a Ricochet interview. We got a Velveteen Dream interview. We got a, Shayna interview, which I thought was the best one. Aleister Black blows off the interview. Larkin and Burst get a sweet little interview. EC3. Finally.
I agree. I like...
I'm still going through here. I'm sorry.
Gotcha.
Then you see Aleister Black blows off the interview in a polite way. Larkin and Burst do a little interview. And EC3... did an interview, and for most of them, they're all bookend by their match, highlights of their matches. They're just recapping the show. I mean, this really was a dead-in-the-water show, if you will. Did anything really stand out for you?
I liked Aleister Black kind of not doing the interview, not wanting to talk, and even though it plays into the, like, he's bad at interviews kind of thing, and people don't like his accent or the way he talks and stuff, to me, I liked it. I thought it worked with his character, so I was actually into it. The only other thing that stood out to me was during EC3's, you could see that the Zoom recorder wasn't actually recording, which I thought was funny. And then as I noticed it, the person holding it intentionally put their thumb over the screen so that you couldn't see that it wasn't recording anymore, which I was like, it's a little late for that, but okay. So I thought that was pretty funny. Otherwise, there was some good stuff here. I thought, like you said, I agree. Shayna stood out the best. EC3 was good for moving forward because he's the only one who didn't have a match. Right. But everyone else was pretty solid.
Agreed. And then we got War Raiders versus the Mighty. What were you thinking when you were watching this match?
Mighty's looked great here. I mean, I've been shaky on them, but I kind of thought that this heel turn thing wasn't going to help. But
it worked. This worked.
They were fantastic here. They got heat really well. The crowd was into it. I mean, yeah, the everything here was fantastic. The Mighty, even or not even the Mighty, the War Raiders. I kind of shit on the idea of them being, you know, clap your hands, say yeah, baby faces. But even that's working. The crowd's super into it. Which again, like maybe my issue with it was a little bit more that I personally don't like that, and I don't think that it's a great perfect role for Ray Rowe. But it's working. The crowd's into it, so fuck it. Like I can't argue with that. You know, if it's getting over, then great. So this was fantastic, honestly, for both these teams. They felt like big deals coming out of this. They're in front of a big crowd. The crowd got into everything, and moving forward, I mean. You know, the Mighty take the loss here, but they're showing here. I don't think it hurts their momentum, or it doesn't hurt the likelihood of moving forward that they can do something, because they got something here with this heel act. They actually, I did not expect it, but they're working as a heel unit.
Totally agree. They come across, they could be a version of the Midnight Express in a way. I enjoyed them, and they actually had me believe that they were going to pull off an upset here. So that's saying something. That's saying that I bought into the work, what the good teams were doing.
I didn't mention that, but you're totally right. I mean, I really did by the end of it. I was like, oh shit, like they are really getting into these guys. They're going to win this. You know, you're right. That's 100% true.
I give the show, it was fine, but you know, for what it was, this show is like a place eater. You're just waiting for next week and what's going to happen and stuff. So nothing. It's a very skippable show unless you're a completist. So
I would say watch the episode, but with your finger on the fast forward button, because there's so much to skip through. There's no point in watching most of it.
Exactly. And then why don't we take a final break, and then we'll head into the two Commonwealth Cup.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Match of the Week podcasts, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Through the Years, Worldcast, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Center Stage, and Letters from Kayfabe, plus much more. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as Talking Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, NBA Team, PTBN Play, Sunday Groove, Breaking Balls, and Lucha Undead,
as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans
with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and Marvel Age Podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback today. All these shows, plus others, available at PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlayStation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And welcome back, and we're talking the Commonwealth Cup from Nova Pro. We're just going to talk about the cup matches, not the whole shows. There was two of them. But we're just going to talk about the tournament itself proper. And we opened up with a Logan Easton LaRue match versus Eric Royal. And I want to say I absolutely hated like the video game graphics, the old school ones. I hated the energy bars.
Yeah.
Really thought that was tacky. I'm not sure. The crowd, I'm not sure if it was the crowd or it was the mix of the announcers and the crowd. It just didn't, it made it sound like the crowd wasn't hot, so I don't know. I love Eric Royal's pounces in this. I thought they had a really good opening match. I thought they paired up well. I give it like 3.25. It wasn't like blow home, you know, go away home, blow away. But that was a really good opener to get your feet wet in a way to get ready for the show. I thought this was a really good good opening show. What about you?
Yeah, I think these guys have really great chemistry with each other, obviously from their history, especially in Nova Pro. Oh, I guess before I even start, I should point out, I don't remember if it was last week or a couple weeks ago, but I was talking about the Nova Pro incident with Stutz and all that, and the kind of stuff with Tom Green, and I was confusing the Commonwealth Cup with the Dynamite Cup. Tom Green books the Dynamite Cup, he doesn't book Nova Pro. So yeah, that was my confusion there. But these guys, I always like the booking of this, because this was the final from the first Commonwealth Cup, and so that now it's the first match of the opening round of this year's. I always like stuff like that, just because I'm kind of big into symbolism. It's so funny, because there's a certain kind of, like, melodrama bullshit in wrestling that I don't get into, but there's, like, symbolism stuff like this that I always do really get into, and, like, I think it really comes down to it when it's in the context of it being the wrestling match itself is the symbolism, as opposed to like some acting or something that you're doing in the match, or even sometimes props. That will always get me really annoyed, is when props become the symbolism of a match, like t-shirts,
yeah.
Like in that Gargano Almas feud where they kept using the DIY t-shirt,
yeah,
as a stand-in for Ciampa. That kind of stuff will really grate at me. But when you have it be like, we want to show that there is not a chance that these guys will be in the main event, the final, again, so they are going to go against each other. You're almost basically giving the number one seeds a disadvantage in the tournament, because you're intentionally showing that as a tournament, you focus more on the idea that you want this tournament to show that it moves forward, and so you won't have the same people in the final again. You know what I mean? So you're pushing forward and proving that narrative. I gave the match 3 stars. Eric Royal oozes charisma. I love him as a babyface against LaRue, which is not something that on paper, until their feud really got going, that I would say works. But LaRue is an undersized heel against the much larger Royal babyface. It works perfectly. I don't know how these guys pull... I mean, I do know how these guys pull it off. It's because Eric Royal is one of the best wrestlers on the fucking planet who doesn't get the credit he deserves. And I think that the argument that I'm hearing from people talking about that he's the best unsigned wrestler, the best wrestler who exists who doesn't have their name on a piece of paper, I think that that is without question. I think the conversation about Eric Royal is if you can get him into your top 10 best wrestlers in the world, honestly. Like, that's the real conversation about the guy.
He made mine last year.
I don't
know if I have it this year, because he doesn't have, like, you know, we're missing gaps of Mid-Atlantic now. He's traveling more, but, you know, it's still, he's not working in these super high-profile places either.
Right, but I'm just saying the idea that he's the best non-signed wrestler is not even a question, because he's actually in the conversation of just best wrestlers. Like, I don't really worry that much about the signing. The guy is just phenomenal, so he makes this work so well.
Agreed. What do you think of Dominic Greeny and Jonathan Gresham?
I mean, this is my kind of match. The grappling to begin with between these guys is amazing. Again, I talk about John Gresham. When he is in there...
Now, you heard Kushida and Gresham are signed for a Ring of Honor, woo! Right?
Yes, and I think he's got another match like the next day that's on paper, possible like match of the year contender match, and I can't remember who it is. But yeah, the guy, he's got big time matches coming up. That Kushida-John Gresham match, I mean, realistically, that's like, I want to break into Voices of Wrestling territory and give that a star rating before it happens, basically. Because it's like, that feels like match of the year contender written all over it. We'll see how it does, but those guys together...
He pulled a really strong match out of Cody at the Ring of Honor show I went to.
Yeah, but see, that's the th- like Gresham. This was to say about this match. Basically, it gets back into my point perfectly. Gresham with anyone can have really great opening grappling sequences that can bring like novel and unique, cool stuff. But in here against Dom, I mean, the stuff that they do to open, it's shit that I've never seen before. Or maybe I've seen once on a World of Sport tape years ago with like little kind of counters back and forth and stuff that Gresham does and the movements and his crispness. I mean, these guys are so good together. I don't know how many times they've wrestled. I really don't know how much they've interacted, but watching this, you'd think that they've wrestled each other 1,000 times. I mean, the way that they're able to go back and forth. Then you got Dom. I mean, ever since you mentioned it here on this show, it's a talking point that I think more people need to bring up and see. I mean, Dom as kind of a modern day Bruno Sammartino. The guy is just, he's thick, he's believable, but he's also got that background.
Points now, brother.
Yeah, exactly. I'm saying you're right. No, I'm saying you're 100% right, man. I mean, the guy is just, other people should see this. I mean, he's.
Yeah, and another thing that I like that reminds me of Bruno is that his moves aren't like really flashy, but
no.
But they're believable. They're just like Bruno. Yeah,
that's exactly what I was getting into saying, is that the stuff that he does feels like a fight, but he's also got the technical background that you know he's got the skill to keep up with anyone, but he's a bruiser, and he's going to fight you. And that's how Bruno always felt. Bruno felt like, even though he didn't have the same technical prowess background, he did have the, like, when someone did him wrong, he was, you know, he's going to have a sportsman's contest against people, but if someone does him wrong, or he, you know, believes that they deserve it, he was gonna fight them, and he was gonna bring it and really kick someone's ass. And Dom has that same feeling. Love the pile driver finish, real clean. It's over from Dom in general, and especially in this match. I gave this 3.5 stars. I really love these guys together.
Yeah, that's exactly what I went with. I went 3.5. I'm loving Gresham on the arm, and I'm love Greeny after Gresham's arm. I'm liking those both guys getting out or battling out and are trying to fight for position and control. The grappling has been really good here. And then you see Gresham transition to the leg, big strike exchange. Yeah, this had a lot of really neat stuff in it, and they just told a really interesting story. Next up was Freddie Yehi versus Tim Dunst. I thought this was pretty good. I give it 2 3/4. I liked Yehi on the floor was really good here. The comedy spots are funny, but I don't know. I'm not sure if I want a bunch of comedy spots in my Freddie Yehi match. He gets down and dirty. Like, the first half was a little ha-ha-ha, but then he got down to business. He got down and dirty, and he got me engaged. But for a while there, they had me check out. But the work dragged me back in towards the end. What were your feelings here?
Pretty much the same. I gave it 2 3/4 star as well. I thought that when there wasn't a bunch of stupid horse shit going on, the match was very good. I thought that Gresham, like you talked about Gresham, when he got into it and Donst started acting like Grisham's kind of, or not Gresham, I keep saying Gresham this whole time, Yehi. I thought that Yehi's control and his work was phenomenal. And when Donst started seemingly needing to get serious because of, you know, having it be taken to him by Yehi, that's when the match really started to get good. I hated that once it felt like it was going, that the fucking safety crew is still popping their heads into it. Yeah. As the match is feeling serious, it's just like, God, don't remind me of this bullshit. I like Yehi's, you know, finish with a cheating, using the ropes for the finish here. And I think, again, I talked about it with the MLW show, but I like that, you know, we're not having the same finishes over and over again. You know, we're having mix-up stuff. So, like, there hasn't been distractions and interference and all this, and then there is here, and then Yehi gets the flatliner into the Koji Clutch for the submission. So I think we're 2 for 2 now, 2 in a row, giving the same star ratings here. So let's see how the show continues on.
What do you think of Jacobs versus Sage Phillips?
I've actually been higher on Phillips lately than I was originally, but then this match really felt like he didn't deliver, and in some ways I blame it on Jacobs.
Yeah, I blame Jacobs completely on this. It felt like he sandbagged him completely, and
yeah,
it made him like a joke instead of like a serious. I thought he undercut Phillips almost everywhere he possibly could have undercut him.
And I think that part of the problem with this, too, was I felt like this was kind of... And I don't know this for sure, but just the way that it felt is I felt like this was a good match to be an argument for why you don't necessarily want to tell your commentators always what the finish and the story is. Because it felt like the commentators here, because they knew what was supposed to be happening, that they were telling me a story that I wasn't watching. Because they're talking about this being the most brutal match and probably the most brutal match that they've ever seen in the history of, you know, the Commonwealth Cup and all this stuff. And I was just kind of like, I didn't see it. I thought that some of the aggression from Dominic Guarini and Eric Royal looked better than this. And Jacobs, you talk about him just sandbagging Guarini. I think on top of sandbagging Guarini, he made his own offense didn't look good. So it's just this idea that he's really given it to Phillips and just taken him apart. I just wasn't delivered in the actual ring in what was going on. So I think that it really affected my ability to enjoy the match. I guess, like I said, Phillips, the only issue with him is that I'm shaky on him. So the idea that he's in a match that I didn't feel super delivered hurts my overall feeling of him when it wasn't necessarily his fault. But it is something where, you know, maybe his selling could have been more dynamic. Maybe he could have done something. But realistically, I think Jimmy Jacobs didn't give him enough here to make this work. I gave it 2.25. I thought that there was some stuff that I liked. There was some crisp offense from Phillips. I thought some of Phillips' hope spots looked very good. But I think that the sandbag, the weight, the lead balloon was Jimmy Jacobs throughout the entire match.
Yeah. You didn't take him serious, so therefore you don't put him over. And I mean, there's just certain ways to treat him, like, in a way, but he was treating him like he was a joke. And then it's hard to get over or get people believing with you when you have Jacobs, who was perceived as a big star, not even taking you seriously. I thought he just totally ruined the match for me. He was a star and a half. I was really disappointed in this match. And, I was just felt like Jacobs totally phoned it in too.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that by the end, if you talk about it, you can do the match where the big star takes the local guy not seriously, but by the end he has to show that he got something out of him. And then when on the end of it, you got Jimmy Jacobs almost acting like he's trying to get his heat back by trying to brawl with the crowd or something or fight with the crowd.
Yeah.
Then it continues to make Phillips feel like an afterthought.
Yep. That leads us to Hot Sauce Williams versus Curt Stallion. This match didn't really work for me either. Gave it 2.25. I absolutely hate the no-sell German spots right off the bat. I mean, it's like, fuck, at least build to them. You know? Make it matter and build to them. Why do it so early in the match? I don't understand. Then later on, they do the no-sell German spot again. I mean, it's like, fuck! Are you kidding me? It didn't work. It didn't get over for me the first time. It sure the fuck ain't gonna get over the second time. But at least they tried to make it build to the second time around. I get 2.25. Just, ugh. Not my style that I like. And this guy coming off seeing Curt Stallion work Silas Young at Ring of Honor and just steal the show. What were your thoughts here?
Yeah, I think that, this match would have Carl Gotch rolling over in his grave, and I think even he would sell that more than these guys sold the Germans. So I agree with you on that. I liked the matchup on paper, and I liked some of the action where they felt like it was a fight. They're two tough guys. Williams has a little bit of a kind of an edge when it comes to technicality, but
yeah, you know, right there, you said it right there, Tim. The match should have been fucking Williams controlling about 60%, 70% of it, giving Curt Stallion hope spot so he has this cool offense, giving him some great comebacks. But no, we got none of that. It was like, fuck, it was like the blind leading the blind. And it kind of exposed both wrestlers for having flaws in their game.
Yeah, and I think it really hurts when you have Williams as the face of the brand now. It really doesn't make any sense to me as a guy who, on paper, again, like a lot of times, I like this guy. He's had amazing matches with Riddle. He's had good matches with, you know, Thatcher, Drew Gulak, Yehai, all these people. He's shown that he can be in there with guys who are considered top flight workers. But
yep.
Then when he's in this setting, this is what he delivers. And it does make me question why you take the belt off of someone like John Grisham, you know, the Powerbomb TV title, because John Grisham could have made this match sing. I mean, obviously, he already shows that. But yeah,
you think maybe with Grisham, it's more because of his affiliation with Ring of Honor. But then again, Hot Sauce is affiliated with Evolve. So
right. And I guess Ring of Honor is less independent. I don't know.
Yeah. Who knows? Yeah.
But okay. I'm with you. 2.5 stars. I thought on paper this matchup was exciting, but then in execution they didn't deliver what they could have, and yeah, there was no narrative here, and they really just tried to treat it more like they were just pure equals, and I think that the storyline of Williams's technical prowess would have helped make the match better.
Yeah. Homicide versus Bo Crockett. On paper, this might have been the most weirdest opening match on the show. I thought it was a fun fight. I enjoyed Crockett selling the leg, and it comes up and plays into the finish. Give it 2.5 stars. I mean, I exceeded expectation levels. I going into this, I thought this was going to be a stinker, and they had a really good match. So there you go. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I liked it even more than you. I gave it 3.25. I loved the opening. I loved Homicide using the brawling around the building and choking Bo with the cord. The referee is just watching him. But then what I like about it is that I think Homicide, there is a deeper narrative to Homicide as a wrestler and his character that he always keeps. And as you follow and kind of know his background, I think you get it more in that he's not just the Brody Hansen Necro Butcher kind of model guy that he comes across as a brawler, but he's also a very talented technical wrestler who's, you know, got his history and fame for training as well, in that he kind of uses that brawling and wild style to throw people off their game, and then he settles into leg work that's really well done and technically solid. And I mean, he plays off of that throughout basically the rest of the match, working over the leg and going after Bo Crockett and eventually getting the win with a leg submission. So again, like I said, it just shows that he's got more of a game plan than comes across from when you just pay attention to on paper. And it actually works really well in his advantage to take advantage of what his opponents are expecting from him because of, you know, his aura and his background. So I gave the match, like I said, 3.25. I thought that Homicide showed his depth of character here again really well. I thought Bo Crockett was super solid in the offense that he got, but I think that Homicide really carried the match and made it work super well. Yeah.
I totally agree. And then this leads us to the next match, which is my favorite match of the tournament. Alexander James versus Wheeler, Utah. I loved the grappling. Absolutely loved it. Big stand, a big stomp on the hand set up James's heat. Loved it. James kicking the arm and the hand. Loved it. Wheeler was just great at selling all this stuff. Yuta after the leg. This is wrestling right up my alley. I'm just loving all this. You know, it's like grabbing an arm, working it, grabbing the leg, working it, you know, working a body part, having a narrative, telling the story. Love James hitting the hand to try to escape. Just great stuff, man, throughout. A lot of great callbacks in here. Not from previous matches, but from great callbacks to the story they were telling. 4 stars. I absolutely love this match. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I gave it 3.75. I'm right there with you. I think Alexander James just confirmed super worker Alexander James. No, since his time in WXW, he's continued to get better, but the arm work here was phenomenal. But you got to have that right dance partner, and Yuta, I mean, I thought at this point, I thought it was interesting, and it gets more into it on the second night, obviously. But I was like, they're building up two super underdog babyfaces with Phillips and Yuta, but the execution here with James was much better. And I think that on paper, they expected the opposite. I think that they probably thought Sage Phillips was going to get over, like I talked about with the commentary, talking about the most violent match that they've ever seen and all this. But like, this was the match where I thought you really got over Yuta as an underdog babyface. You talked about it. That arm work from James repeatedly was great. I love James working over the arm with the armbar, and he does the bow taunt that he does. That kind of stuff, I think, is always great from a heel, especially as it plays into a really good hope spot from Yuta that then gets cut off from the selling of Yuta because he can't do the springboard, which is something I've never seen before. I don't know about you, but I've never seen someone who's selling a hand and they go for that springboard and they can't because they're trying to pull themselves on the rope and the hand gives out. That was something I've never seen.
Osprey do that, yeah.
Yeah, and I was just like, that was amazing. That's just such a great little thing that, like, you're not going to see. So, and I'm poking a little bit of fun talking about James as the super worker, because I know Evan in the Slack group that I'm in, he talks about James being terrible, but I'm like, how do you watch a match like this and not see that Alexander James is really fucking good? He just has to have the right dance.
I've liked all his WXW stuff this year that I've seen, and last year even. And
yeah.
Yeah, no, you're nuts, Evan. then we got the big match everyone's looking forward to, PCO versus Nick Gage. What were your thoughts, man?
Well, I talked about Homicide not just being, you know, wild brawler, but that's what Nick Gage is, obviously, here, you know. I mean, the guy cannot even really apply, like, an arm wringer properly, realistically. Like, the guy, I don't know if he was officially trained by anyone who you would consider even a wrestling trainer. But the brawling around the building,
factor, right?
That's it. The guy, he gets you into it. You buy into what he's doing. The brawling around the building feels dangerous no matter what. The repeated pile drivers and just wanton disregard for people's health. I mean, you believe every bit of it. I really do. Like, I dislike Nick Gage as a person because of how well his character comes across. And from all intents and purposes, I've heard people say that he's a sweetheart. I've heard people say he's a real piece of shit. I've heard stuff all around the world. And I really think that a lot of it comes down to his character, is that he is just so believable as a fucking asshole that he's just unprofessional, has no disregard for people's safety, any of that. PCO, you know, obviously, I mean, PCO's stiff, and I don't necessarily know that I would say he's a dynamic seller, right? But
right.
His body's got so much wear and tear on it that you believe everything that's happening to him, no matter what, that he's getting beat up.
The fact that he's 50-something, that you just buy into it. It's just, you know, it's a story you want to like.
Right, yeah, it doesn't matter necessarily that he's not, you know, it's getting big facial selling or over the top anything from his selling. It's real subdued, but it's real believable because he's just he's an old man, and he's an old man who's falling apart.
And he's evolving his style to match what's going on today. You know, it's right.
Yeah, the combination, like, looked like he was attempting a Super Rana that turns into, like, almost like a vertical suplex T-bone throw thing off the top. It's just sloppy, kind of in the right way that you're just like, ah, you know, he's just trying. Then he gets the win with the moonsault. I really liked this. I gave it 3 stars, but it was like, the work is not what matters. It's the character, it's the guys, it's buying into what they're doing. It's all of that, less than it is. Like, you know, there's not a lot of crisp offense here, you know?
Yeah, I give it 3.5, and I mean, I enjoyed the brawling. I enjoyed the big moves. I thought a lot of the stuff was built pretty well, too. Now, one thing I would have loved was, I mean, here we have Nick Gage after PCO's ear. I could have gone with that as the narrative the whole match and probably enjoyed the match more. Because, one, you're in Crockett Country, home of Valentine and Piper. And then you have old school brawler and you know, the Quebecer who, he kind of reminds me of Piper in a way. And you have Nick Gage, who, you know, another guy who just brawling. And you can see, I would have loved to see him work the ear the whole match, but they didn't spend a whole, I think they only spent like 2 minutes, and what they did was awesome, but I think they could have fleshed the whole match around it and made it the match even better. But overall, I still enjoyed the hell out of it. You know, night one, I thought was interesting. It reminded me, I mean, the whole tournament reminded me a lot of Scenic City, but it doesn't have the history of Scenic City right now and the cachet. So some of the stuff they were trying, it doesn't work, but it was still a very good first round. It was just hot because it started off hot, finished hot, but then the middle just kind of like, I could see the middle kind of sucking people out of the tournament because they were so, it just peaked at the wrong, and it wasn't, I mean, I guess some people can say, well, you went up and down, up and down, but you weren't. You started hot, kind of fizzled out, and we're on the verge of like almost losing the crowd, but then they got hot again. I mean, I'd still give the show a thumbs up in the right there, but it was dangerously close to almost disengaging the fans and stuff. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, the SCI comparison is very strong, and I do worry that this makes a lot of stuff that's going to happen in the SCI seem, or, you know, it comes across, ends up being too much, even like what the SCI is going to end up looking like this year. So there is that kind of comparison that's pretty easy to see. Talking about the ebb and flow of the show, for sure, I felt like there was some issues, especially, we didn't talk about it, but there's a women's tag in the middle of the show, which I don't know if I would say hurt the show, but it definitely didn't add anything to the show, really. And I kind of saw it as trying to be a showcase for the women's tournament, but it felt like kind of forcing too many women into the one match and not really giving me a narrative that would make me super excited about going into the women's show. So I don't know that that helped with kind of the hurting of the flow. I thought that they did a good job with some things, which is like having a nice cushion between the two matches that I talked about that could be very easily compared to each other, with the babyface matches of Yuta and Sage Phillips. I think they did a good job of having enough in between there to where you didn't really think of it. But I did think that they did kind of have it opener heavy and closer heavy, which I guess is in some ways the WWE model, right? Of booking a wrestling show, but it's not necessarily the way I like a wrestling show to be booked. So in a lot of ways, I think that even though I loved the symbolism of having the you know, one of the main event matches of the first year end up being the opening match of the second year, I don't know how I felt. Like, I kind of felt like that probably should have ended up being the main event of the show, with Eric Phillips and LaRoe given more time differently, and then had the PCO Gage match underneath that. Or, I mean, I guess you could try to do it the other way around, but I think that the structure was a little bit off for my personal taste.
Yeah, and then, you know, I mean, we'll get into it on night two, is they also use the Final Four concept at the end, where you have all four away. And I'm not a fan of that, but I started liking it because it made SCI different than other tournaments. But now everyone now feels like SCI has become too big to where people are, you know, following that trend. And it's like, yeah, man, I wish they would kind of just like, don't do it like that. I mean, you let them be different on your own. You don't have to. Just because it works for one group doesn't mean it works for all groups. And there's a reason for that. And we'll talk about why this one didn't work as well. I wish, like, even to the match times, they felt real quick, like bam, 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 bam. They didn't give anybody time to really steal the show either, you know. Everyone had about the same amount of time. So, I mean, that's fair and all, but you think you'd give some of the guys a little bit more time, like, here, steal the show, and this is why. Like, I would have given Phillips and, you know, Jacobs less time, and we could have spent some time here, more time here, but we didn't get that. But, you know, oh well. Now we're over to night two of it. Stokely is out, and he does a little yang angle, yay high, and he ends up yay high, ends up aligning himself with Stoke. We open up with Yay High versus Hot Sauce. What were you thinking?
These guys have had really
and the
good
fact
matches.
That, hold on, before you start, the fact that they do an angle and give yay high. Stokely and then have yay high job out, I don't get. What was the point of this at all?
Yeah, I there was a lot of stuff that I thought was a little weird in this match. Yay high kind of transitioning back and forth on the Koji clutch I thought was weird and awkward. Even though he was kind of going, I don't know what he was going for there, honestly. Like, he was trying to reposition himself. Like I said, these guys have had great matches before, but really more just straight up, you know, the catch point stuff where they're kind of friends who are or just fighting each other kind of thing worked a lot better for them instead of this with all the angle and all the hoopla around it. I think honestly really did detract from the match. I thought that Yehi's control looked really good. I honestly thought that a lot of his offense, especially the kicking in the face that fired up Williams, I think really helped to put Williams over. That fire up out of that was probably the best, that as like a fiery underneath baby face that I've seen Williams look realistically. So I did like that. Yeah, I thought that Yehi did a good job of helping Williams look good coming out of this, but I thought there was a lot of goofiness to it. I gave the match 2¾ star. I didn't love it, but I did like. I mean, I guess I liked the work of the match itself, but I didn't love everything else around it with Stokely and all of that.
And here I gave it 3¼, and I thought the grappling was fun early on, and Williams after the knee. I liked the AI selling of it. I loved all the battling at the fingers and stuff. I think I loved all that. But yeah, it felt like it was lacking something. And then we got Sage Phillips versus Dominic Guarini. And here was like night and day. I thought Phillips had a great match with Guarini. Gave this 3.5. Big dive by Sage to start. Dom is focusing on the back, working Sage's back. Liked the fighting on the outside. Again, I love Dominic going back to the back. Had a very personal feel to it. Loved Dom slapping the ears of Sage. And then Sage pulled off the surprise win, which I liked because I wasn't expecting it. 3.5. Where were you at?
On this one, I was 3¼. I thought that Phillips' selling was fantastic. I thought it was, you know, it was pretty quick, but it was really good. And I thought that this was the match to really help Sage get over as the plucky underdog babyface. He's kind of got that Gargano light thing going on. I don't know if he was trained by Gargano. I know Dominic was trained by Gargano, which is interesting, because he's facing a guy who comes across more like him here. Liked the double butterfly brainbuster kind of finish. I thought that was a really good way to not make it look fluky and have Wheeler come out looking, Sage Phillips come out looking strong.
And then we got Homicide versus Willie Yuta. What were your thoughts here?
This is where I thought it was weird to have the two underdog baby faces back to back, essentially
both of them, right? Yeah.
Both of them going into the finals, which again, at that point, I'm like, I don't really understand why you would set up the finals to have the two big underdog baby faces that you've built.
And then this finish for the baby face.
Yeah. Which I really kind of really hurt the match for me a lot.
Yeah. Well, I heard it was because the ref thought there was blood. And so he called a finish.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought that they were
so bad for the baby face.
Yeah, I thought they were getting there. I thought they were having what could have been a very good match, but the finish fucked it all up for me. I thought that Homicide looked really good on top, obviously. Again, Yuta's selling was done really well, but the finish fucked it up for me. I gave it 3¾ just because that really hurt it a lot for me, and it felt like they cut off the match before they really got
you
to go through the
full... 3¾ still?
No, 2¾. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
2¼. And yeah, I thought that they completely... Basically, they probably ended up cutting out what would have been Yuta's big comeback and finishing stretch, which could have probably helped make the match, honestly.
I'm with you. I gave it 3. And I liked the story they're told. I mean, besides the finish, which absolutely was a drizzling shits. Yuta's shine was, I thought, was a little so-so. But Homicide's... Heat was really fun. Enjoyed Yuta's comeback. Nice tease of a comeback, only for Yuta to press on. Loved Homicide going back to the leg, but that finish was the shit. And that leads us into the... I'm sorry. We got Eric Royal versus PCO next. And... I thought this was a really good match. Give it 3.5. Royal had ramming PCO's nuts. What a nutso chop fest they had. Tope by PCO. And then PCO busts out the garbage stomp that actually had me scream audibly in my living room, like, ah, it's a move you don't ever see. I tweeted it to PCO that he popped me, and he told me he wants to get the PCO's crucifixion over instead of the Garvin stomp. But it is his homage to Ron Garvin, who he grew up watching and is a big fan of. But he wants to get it over as the PCO's crucifixion. Still a really good fun fight. I felt like it could have been better, but I felt the crowd kind of hurt it a little bit. Still gave it 3.5 stars. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I gave it 3.5 stars as well. I'm with you. I thought that this match showed kind of the better side of what you need for a PCO match to work really well, which is a super dynamic person going against him in Eric Royal to help play off of the stiffness a little bit that I talked about with PCO. Because Gage just doesn't have that, you know? Like, Gage, I talked about it. He's not really a super talented wrestler. He's got the it factor as a brawler, but I thought that Eric Royal put it over the top. His offense is big. It gets the crowd hyped. He's got a lot of, you know, charisma and all this. The chopping all around the ring was just insane. Got to see Johnny P there almost getting caught up in the whirlwind exchange.
Give him props, man. He had nowhere to go.
Yeah, he was dangerously close to that action, man. These are two big boys just going at it. So I'll give it to him. The backdrop onto the apron by PCO was a nice little, like, you talk about it. I mean, the guy is working like pretty much all the top indie wrestlers now. He's doing all the spots. Big dive to the floor. Just great stuff all around. Like I said, I thought that Eric Royal is probably one of the best opponents PCO has had on this comeback, for just like the way that he balances out what PCO has with what he has, making up for, what PCO lacks as a wrestler right now at his age. I think Eric Royal helped to fill in those gaps. Really, really loved the finish with that big tackle to put PCO down, and then, you know, gets the pin, gets the win there. Really, really solid stuff. I gave it 3.5, 2. I'm with you. I think the crowd could have been a lot more hyped, a lot more into it, and it could have really helped the match overall, but still, really good match.
What do you think of the main event?
The main event, four-way. Thought it went a little bit too fast. I did. Yeah. Again, I thought it's weird having the two underdogs in there with each other a lot, as Royal and Williams seem to be kind of... the two underdogs kind of disappeared, and Royal and Williams are slugging it out for a long periods of the match, which I thought was weird, because clearly, I mean, you would think that the underdog babyface guys would be the focus of the match, selling, getting beaten up, but they were
and no heels gone. No heels in this four-way.
Yeah, no real heels, all babyfaces. I liked when Yuta and Royal were in there finally together. I guess that's kind of skipping over, you know. Space Jam puts out Williams. I just couldn't buy into Sage kind of using forearms against Royal. Like, I don't see there any situation where Sage Phillips forearming the shit out of Royal is going to put him down no matter what. Sage gets put down by Royal. So now you got Royals beat both guys, and it's coming down to him and Yuta. And that's, to me, when I really started to enjoy the match quite a bit. It was just when it was Yuta and just Royal. The pace picks up. I thought that the Yuta looking for the STF over and over again was really well done. I love the selling on that from Royal. I love the counters, the quickness, the leg work from Yuta. I mean, yeah, I think that these two guys as the singles final, would have probably, honestly, in some ways, probably been better if it was just them, these two against each other as the finals instead of the four-way. Could have given them more time. I don't know how you get to it easier without having two more matches or whatever.
But, you cut some of the stuff off. We didn't need we had these non-tournament matches.
We didn't need the NWA title match for goddamn sure.
Right.
Jimmy Jacobs, Alexander. I mean, we talked about, you know, Alexander James being such a good worker, but even he's not going to get too much out of Jimmy Jacobs at this point. The final from the women's tournament, that's another one. I mean, should that match have just been on the Women's Cup show? Probably. And then you could have had room here to do, you know, the semifinal matches and end up with just a final match that probably would have been a lot better. Really felt more like a final, because this felt like a really good final match that had a bunch of stuff tacked onto the front with two other guys. And I think if you had coming into this, maybe gotten some heel heat on Royal. I mean, which could have been very easy, getting heel heat on Royal coming off of the PCO match, and then had him work, you know, we've seen it, that CWF heel, Eric Royal, going against Wheeler Yuta, where it was very clear that he's going to go dirty in this match. I think it would have been even better. That said, I mean, they got a lot out of Eric Royal here selling for Yuta. And like I said, that submission work really put over Yuta kind of as a technical wrestler as well, being able to doggedly continue fight. He's going for that hold, and getting the win. That said, I mean, the final between Eric Royal and Yuta, I probably would have much higher rating for, but because this match also includes that beginning stuff, I gave it 3.25. That's still not terrible, obviously, but I think it was a much better singles match at the end there. And then I did love Homicide coming out and attacking him, especially with that bullshit finish. It makes sense to have Homicide come out, and he's feels like he got fucked out of, he could have been in this title, in this final instead, but he got cheated out of the match. And he's a guy, like I talked about, with his credibility, his background, and his skill, that I think in some ways they may have lucked into it. Even though that finish hurt that match quite a bit, it does help you create a pretty decent storyline that you can tell with Homicide and Yuta going forward.
Yep, I'm with you. I give it 3 stars and agree with a lot of what you had to say there. I mean, but I did really enjoy the closing sequence. With that said, overall, again, I give it a thumbs up, but it's just like the show could have been better. That's the frustrating part.
Yeah, I mean, yes, and the talent was there, and the matches were even there. It was just filler and weird choices and stuff like that. Which, I mean, you know, I don't even remember who, but I hear people talk about not knowing the backgrounds and not knowing what's really happening and making the best decisions. And you know, it sucks because I understand that there's more to wrestling than meets the eye and the shows and all that. But that doesn't mean that we can't necessarily point out some stuff that could have been a little bit better here and there. That said, good shows overall and a lot of stuff that I really enjoyed. That's for sure.
Okay, cool. Timothy, anything you want to plug before we head out?
No, just follow me on Twitter at Lucha Undead. I actually will be recording a new episode of the podcast here coming up very shortly. So that'll be out soon as well. So just follow me, like I said, on Twitter at Lucha Undead.
Yeah, follow me at Titans O' Wrestling. Hit me up on Wednesdays for WorldCast Wednesday. Catch you later. Keep on watching the wrestling. Later.
0011100 crying zeros and now. 0011100 crying zeros and now.
It's hot at night in the summertime. Woo! The summer's mine. That's underlined. King push, kingpin, put none over mine. Dope boys working overtime, lot of hustle, got an open mind. Real time foreign cars, real time foreign broads. Watch face frozen time, true drug overlord. We just going overboard. Yacht parties, jet skis, say you ballin', let's see. Pull up in the SL, let her do the SC. Ask her what's her ring size, let her do the Gretzky. I just do the king size, all I know is ringside. All we do is celebrate, you knowin' how the king ride. Push.
0111100 crying zeros and now I'm leaving 111s. Cut my summer soul, summer bay flow. Poor summer, summer, poor, poor summer. 0111100 crying zeros and now I'm leaving 111s. Cut my summer soul, summer bay flow. Poor summer, summer, poor, poor summer. Where we belong.